Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. I'm your John replacement, Sean, and this is the table of contents for our episode today. Istril, I should say Alex. That's so much easier. Alex and I will bring you some news, a recap of the Dance with Dragons in New York with Patrick and John, and also some spoilers from FFG. It's going to be pretty, that's not going to work. Okay, you'll have to cut that as well. All right, cool. Lots of editing for you. And then we'll follow up with some spoilers from the show and also my opinions on the show versus the book, very briefly. That's not very good. Do you want me to try that again?
You can try it.
All right. I really have to apologize. When we recorded, I recorded off the wrong microphone. So my voice is going to sound bad for the introduction and closing comments. However, the main segments were recorded on the correct microphone. Apologies in advance.
All right, John. This is episode 14, and you're not John.
Yeah, I was about to say. It must be really easy to slip between Sean and John.
It's good. I'm sure there are many people who can't even tell the difference in the way I'm going to pronounce them. So why are you not John?
I am not John because I'm Sean, and I'm joining the Beyond the Wall cast crew.
Yeah, so we made the call 2 weeks ago, and we had a lot of people get back to us. I think we had about 12 serious emails detailing the kind of things they'd like to do for the cast and explaining their equipment and that kind of thing. Some people that were willing to just do the editing and didn't necessarily want to show up on the show. And in the end, John was driving back with Sean, or Sean was driving back with John. It was definitely one of those two, and managed to somehow rope you in, a local metamate that we've recorded with before. You have been Thesaurus Rex. You have worked on the alternate art cards for Beyond the Wall. You have been at many of the same tournaments. You have blocked up the bathroom in the hotel room I stayed at Gen Con. You've been an integral part of the behind-the-scenes team already.
Yeah, I feel like if I didn't deprive John of his shower the morning after, he wouldn't have that great story for the cast.
Exactly. You're just contributing to the stories more directly now.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys already know that I work for free with the alternate art cards.
And they already have our logo on them, even though you're the one doing all the work for them now. Exactly. We have nothing to do with them, so it makes sense. So we're actually going to take advantage of the fact that we have a co-host, because John is busy this weekend, and I will be busy 2 weekends from now, and so there'll be a little bit of host rotation. We will try to get the core segments to have the three of us on usually, but there will be a little bit of rotation. So let's, without, I guess, much further ado, jump into the news. What jumped out at you this week?
Well, the Gen Con event listing is pretty exciting. I know I'm planning to go to Gen Con. A lot of Ottawa is. Did you want me to jump into the details here?
Well, I'd like to point out, so the Gen Con event listing went up, but you can't actually buy your tickets yet. That happens on May 15th. However, given the numbers, and we'll talk about that in a sec, you really do want to book your tickets on the 15th at noon Eastern when it goes up. So already have them in your cart or however their system works. That's how it worked last year.
I remember from last year, clicked the queue as soon as I could, and I was positioned 600, and I messaged you, and you were positioned 3,000, and we had essentially clicked at the same time.
Yep.
So it'll go. Right. It'll go.
But
pretty
we both
fast.
Got tickets. We both got tickets. Yeah. So yeah, maybe walk us through the schedule.
Sure. So one thing that really stuck out to me is that now Joust is split up between the prelims and the graduated cut on two different days. So a Thrones prelim for Joust, 220 people on Thursday at noon, and then the graduated cut happens on Friday for 48 people. So that's only 220 people. That's quite a lot of people, but probably not as many that are interested in Thrones at Gen Con. especially those who might be interested as new players. One thing that I thought was pretty cool is that they have an introductory tournament as well on Sunday for 60 people at 10 a.m. So maybe the newer players who aren't feeling so good about jumping in with the veterans will go to that tournament.
The intro tournament is a single core tournament. It's probably closer to a Kingslayer that we had last year as a way to sort of rope new people in that may not have seen the game. So I have no idea how that will fare, but I would generally advise veterans probably not jump into that one.
I thought about it. I was thinking, you know, how desperate am I to win something?
Yeah, you can say you're the Gen Con champs.
Introductory. You don't need to mention the introductory part at all.
That's right.
There's also going to be, I've seen on Facebook, there's talk of an unofficial community run second chance tournament on Friday. I think Dennis is involved, Roy, and I'm forgetting someone who actually started the call. Maybe it was Dennis.
Dennis who started that, yeah. So he says this is the meager contribution white book Beyond the Wall thing. So far as I know, Beyond the Wall isn't doing anything. But if it goes well, we could take credit, and otherwise we can always just hide behind the fact we didn't do anything.
You can throw in some alternate art cards, and all of a sudden we're involved.
There we go. Also, the melee on Saturday as well, smaller 84, but that's probably the right ratio. About a third of the joust is what they could realistically expect. I think it'll also sell out, but I had a couple of comments. I did hear some people were unhappy with the fact that the Thrones prelim, that basically the six-round Swiss tournament, what you'd normally expect, is on the Thursday rather than the Friday, which it is for, say, Netrunner. But lots of their other premium games are on Thursday. I mean, X-Wing is on Thursday as well. I think this is just, there's only so many ways that they can fit it. And the Friday has 300 Netrunner players. It's just, you know, it's going to fill up.
It's going to be a bit of a tighter schedule, too. You're going to have to go in, pick up all your tickets on Wednesday, and then be ready for Thursday. Usually we get that extra time to sort of coalesce and gather and get ready, right? But not this year.
Yeah, but I do think breaking it down into the prelim and the graduated cut, and the graduated cut is probably like a top 32 plus whoever else has the record of the 32nd. I doubt it's a full 48. So it's not just the top 48 players. It's like the top certain amount and then the people who have the same record as that person to make sure nobody misses the graduated cut on strength of schedule, which is nice. But it does break it down into a little more manageable chunks. You know that Thrones prelims, they're starting at noon. They're probably going to end at 8, even if you do well, you know. And the graduated cut, you know it's starting at 1. It's got to end by 6 if you get to the top 8, and you know how long that's going to. You're not going to have the 1 a.m. game, and you're not going to have Nate falling asleep while, you know, someone forgets to put their character agenda on and John loses his Gen Con Joust match. Hopefully none of that will happen.
Yeah, I remember being there for that and talking to John, and I think he forgot to go to the washroom at one point. Like, we had a break, but he was just so tired he forgot about, like, natural bodily functions.
It also does mean that you can probably more easily schedule other things into the different days, knowing when these things are starting and stopping. So I like the switch, and I imagine it sort of mirrors what we'll see at Worlds this year as well. Which probably means we'll also be on the Thursday at Worlds. I don't know. Maybe that's just pure speculation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this will affect the way you build your deck? Are you going to build with multiple openers in case of, you know, the inevitable scouting where people are definitely going to know exactly what you're bringing?
That's a good point. I mean, at Worlds, they have had the cut on the second day already before. They've just never done this for Gen Con yet. I don't think it really does affect how I build my deck. I think, you know, I used to build to make the cut, and I sort of have to build to make the cut and then just hope you get the right pairings and the right draws once you get there. I think if you're trying to sacrifice any part of your deck to do better in the cut, you have to be very confident in your ability to make that top 48 and possibly even that top 8, if that's what you're talking about. So no, I'm hesitant to take that into account in my deck building. I may well take it into account in my play. In the last round of the prelim, I might play in such a way as to, you know, win or lose faster, flame out or whatever, just so I don't have to show all my tricks to have a few more surprises as people are more likely to ask later Swiss adversaries, I think. Other news that we've had this week. This is not news from this week, but the store championship kits. I'm still trying to plug that people ask their stores to order those by May 17th. because remember the store championship season is now alongside or just after Worlds. So it starts this year again as we move on to that track, and the Star Wars ones start their regionals in that that same time. So they're also applying for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
There was the For Family Honor article. I believe it's about CP3. It was posted on the FFG website.
This was the one with the Night's Watch spoilers that didn't suck.
Yeah, no, I think this was an error. If there's good Night's Watch cards, you know something's going wrong. It seems like a pretty interesting mechanic. I wonder if this might harken to a new archetype for Night's Watch with playing out of the opponent's discard, which we saw a little of in first edition, but it never really took off. I think it was largely in Greyjoy, but it was very high cost locations, very...
What was it? 10 Towers allowed you to play the top card of your opponent's discard pile if all of your cards were Greyjoy?
Absolutely. And I mean,
so
that's...
if you took your opponent's card, you're like, oh, well, now not all my cards are Greyjoy.
Yeah, it seems to defeat it. I mean, in Melee, maybe, if you came up against a Greyjoy opponent, you could be like, oh, thank you. You're going to fuel me for the whole game. But aside from that...
Knight Gathers is a really exciting card to me. It has the potential for huge blowouts, for huge card advantage. But it's the kind of card that you need. It's conditional. It's not good on turn one. You need to put work into it. You know, you might need to build the deck with Varus and March to the Wall and, mm-hmm. and Yorin. And I'm really excited about what the ceiling on that card is. And maybe the ceiling's too low and it will never see playable. But I strongly suspect there will be at some point a deck that breaks that and just turns it into a massive card and gold advantage.
Mm-hmm. This article also spoiled the most attractive card we've seen yet. Do you know which one that is? Yeah, Hot Pie.
Yeah, I really like how they shoehorned him in the article.
Yeah.
So they're like, Night Gathers, and Now My Watch Begins, and all this other stuff. And then it's like, at the very last sentence, whether you support your chosen faction with Hot Pie or lead your armies into battle. It's just, I think Evan or whoever wrote the article is like, ah, shit, I got to work Hot Pie into there somewhere.
Oh, and this is also the pack that gave us some very confusing cards, which I'm not sure if it indicates a new... a new mechanic for these factions, but the Baratheon zero cost visited by shadows, which reduces an attached character's strength by one. It seems kind of underwhelming. I mean, maybe if it were non-loyal, you could see that come with Targaryen. I think
it would be very, very good in Targ as a non-terminal zero for -1 burn attachment.
Absolutely. I think that would be a lot of use, but as it currently is written and with the loyalty, it won't be seeing much play.
Well, it may be suggesting we do have at least two Neil mechanics that key off strength. We have Intimidate,
mm-hmm.
which this would matter with, both by how much you win the challenge and who you can Neil with it. And we have Consolidation of Power.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is, you know, maybe some character comes into play and Neil's a character with strength 4 or less, and you can use this to bring characters easily down. And, you know, once you have Valor and you're getting these cards back after using them, these sorts of condition attachments may be very, very useful. But you're right. Right now, it looks completely unplayable.
That's true. And I mean, maybe if the Kingswood is working with it, there might be some synergy there, keeping people locked out of power challenges entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Lordsport Fisherman, who I was incredibly sad to see, because Greyjoy does not need another power monocon. It does not. I mean, you see it and you're like, this looks like the Green Blood Trader, except much worse, significantly worse, which I guess I kind of understand because you don't want to reprint useful, influential cards out of other factions into another faction. But it's just so much worse in every way possible.
Add the bottom card of your deck to your hand. This is working with what? Green Dreams and Baron the Maiden Fair.
If you want to play bad cards to support a bad card, you can do that.
These cost 3, so you can bounce them and play them again. I'm trying to figure out why the bottom card, and I have a feeling this is a, like, he's a fisherman, so he's going to the bottom of the Is that what it is?
That makes sense. Maybe if they add, you know, start printing cards like the Fisher Market, maybe, you know, draw 2, put 1 on the bottom, keep 1. Or, what is the card? Dragged Under, whatever it was called.
Pulled Under, I think, maybe.
Pulled Under. Maybe if it were like a sort of an even-handed where you have to pull one of your characters and one of theirs, and now you can, you know, fish them back up.
Eh, I think it'll take a fair bit of work for that. Tree is a little too expensive for replenishing itself.
I just want Greyjoy draw to exist outside of unopposed, so maybe we can see some other decks without Balon. I don't know. Call me a dreamer.
And maybe the new Balon is not unopposed. The one we know we're getting a King Balon.
True. Yeah.
Maybe he's not unopposed and he's draw and he'll solve your sort of issues. Other stuff. I did see some rumors that they'll, and this is through the FFG organized play letters that they sent out to stores, which apparently is a thing they do. I didn't know that. But they were suggesting that there'd be some co-world events that would, or just after worlds events, that would help choose a card that got printed for Thrones. And they have done this in the past, a long, long time ago. They had a competition where the store results from various stores then got votes towards a card being printed, and I think it wound up being Minstrel's Muse, or being able to choose what faction it got printed in, something like that. So this is not without precedent, but it may be setting the seeds for the way they want to do Legend of the Five Rings, where they need to try and get input from the community to keep the story going, and that was one of the highlights of L5R. So this might be them trying to pilot it a little bit in Thrones.
I wouldn't be surprised. Thrones hasn't. This isn't the first mechanic they've sort of tested in Thrones before they threw it into another pool. I know FFG's done that with a few of their card games, and they do have that reboot coming.
Other stuff that I had, I knew that, or I was told that Across the Narrow Sea, that's the first chapter back, is now embarking across the not-so-narrow sea. So it's probably on a boat somewhere between here and the Pacific, which probably means that the entire cycle is somewhere on a boat between here and China. And so that looks more and more likely that we're going to see a pack possibly in June. And if not that, then, you know, mid-July-ish. And we might even have pack two by Gen Con, although I wouldn't. Maybe pack two at Gen Con rather than pack one at Gen Con, which is exciting. We're used to long, long gaps between cycles. I'm reassured.
You know, Pack 2 by Gen Con would be a real meta shakeup. I know there's some really interesting cards in there, like Kraven and the Kings of Summer, Kings of Winter agendas.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe two agendas is too much of a shakeup. But I guess it depends when, because regional season in the States ends at the end of July, right? Or at the end of June. So technically they have a month, so there's going to be at least a pack in between the end of regionals. And
I think that's a good thing, though. I think that's a whole new Gen Con meta. We're not going to see a rehash of the best decks from the,
regionals season, yeah. Well, we can quickly go over some of the store championship results. It's I've been starting something, which I started last week, where I've been running in the Facebook group trying to pool all the information. And this is mostly for selfish reasons. If I put it there, then I'm more likely to get the data in the annals by harassing people for live feedback from all of these tournaments. But it does mean that earlier in the week, and in this case we're recording on Saturday instead of our usual Sunday, I have a tally of most of the wins and runner-ups for most of these tournaments. So it's been a really good weekend for Martell from the looks of it, and a really good weekend for Barra, with wins out of Martell Lion, Barra Fealty, Stark Fealty, Barra Fealty, Lanny Fealty, Martell Rose, and a Lanny Kraken. So, and even in the runner-ups, I think we only have a single Lannister there as well. So we're certainly seeing a little bit of a drop. Now, whether that's reflected in the full cuts, we'll know in the annals in a couple of days. But people are sick of Lanny, or people are finally finding the counters. I don't know what exactly is the story yet, but I'm glad to see it.
I think it's a Lanny burnout. If I had to guess, I think having played with it recently, breaking it out just to play with some of these new decks that have come up, it's really boring. You draw a card, you play a card, you draw a card, you play a card. There's not much strategy going on. You're not being too clever. I mean, of course, you have to pay attention to the strengths and icons and events and timing, but it's really not that hard. All of the Lannister decks have the economy to play all the cards that they need when they need them, and they have plenty of tricks in hand with plenty of gold off the Tyrion trigger. So, I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say people are A, aiming to beat Lanny, and B, aiming to not be Lanny.
I think that may be the case, but I would be surprised to see that switch happening in regional season rather than store championship season, where people are probably more likely to play something they dislike, and I always think that's a mistake, or something that they're bored with if they think it's got the best chances. While in store championships, they tend to be more flexible with it. So I think it's a little surprising to see this regional season, although this may be a fluke week. You know, again, this is 1 week's worth of data, you know, 8 or 9 tournaments. We'll see what next week brings.
True. I think Martell's also a bit of a sleeper. They've been getting good cards, and they've been lying just underneath, right? They haven't been doing great since the big, was it Gen Con or was it Worlds? It was Worlds, right?
It was
the
Worlds,
big Worlds,
yeah.
Win, the Bratz. But now they've got some good, fancy new cards, and this week kind of shows that they're still competitive.
And they'll only get more so because we have some Martell spoilers later on in the cast. Tournament-wise, at those store championships, or at those regionals, there was actually, I got a call. I was at a friend's house, and I get a call from the UK. I go, what the hell? I haven't applied for any jobs in the UK recently. That's generally when I get, you know, odd area code calls is for that. And it's Tagore calling me because in the Bristol's Cup, they had a game go to time and have the same power. So a true tie in the cut. And they weren't sure what the process for handling this was. And I'm like, oh, I'm almost entirely certain I remember what the new tournament regulations say. And it's play an additional round. And that's what I told them. I checked it later and it turns out I was right. I'm very happy. And I thought, well, that doesn't happen very often. And then I was browsing the French forum for their tournament results. And they had 2 separate rounds do that in their cut in Toulouse. So in the top 8 and the top 4, they had a match go to time with a tie. And they had to add an additional round of those games, which is, I had never heard of that happening before.
We had a true tie at Dance of Dragons.
In the cut?
Not in the cut, before the cut.
Yeah,
okay, you're talking only in the cut. Yeah,
yeah, that's tough in the cut. But it's thankfully the rules actually have a way to deal with that. And lastly, I don't know, did you play Thrones this week?
This week, yeah. I play every Tuesday, so...
Anything to recount? Any horror stories or war stories?
I played Lannister, and it was incredibly easy. I found that actually I had to stop playing at a certain point. I missed that I was playing Crossing, and I missed that the strength was like 2 less, and I basically just said, okay, I've had too many beers, I'm done. At the minute that I forget my own agenda, that's when I need to step away for a little bit.
I had a really nice game with Diane on Thursday. That's ours here. We had about 10 people total, a couple of people playing some Star Wars, but mostly Thrones. And we had a visitor from the Burlington meta who was in town for the week working on campus on a project. And he knew I existed and therefore contacted me. I have a picture of a proxy that he was using called Clams Under Westeros, which people should check on the Facebook group. He actually... It was fun to get fresh blood. I got a chance to play against Martell, which I hadn't done a lot of, and my Stark deck really crushes Martell. It's a blast. I had an excellent game too that went on to plot 8, where I was trying to work my way uphill against a dominance deck and finally got through just by the skin of my teeth, but managed to pull off a ice on a direwolf that I had added lady to on a direwolf pup to pull a military challenge for the For the North. Through and killing Melisandre on a fortified position turn. And that's the dream. That's living the dream there.
that's so many like necessary cards there to pull off that combo.
It was.
If you don't have the fortified, there's no attachments. If you don't have...
Well, I was expecting to be able to pull it off with Rob, and I flipped fortified, and he actually flipped Filthy Accusations. So I was down the character that I needed, and I didn't have another military icon except the one in hand. So I managed to play the Direwolf pup, and then the first thing I did was move Lady to it during the marshalling phase so I could move it back off afterwards and not lose it next turn, to making sure that I still had the gold for that and that I wasn't going to get caught unawares. And then I put ice on it, and it turns out, yeah, the order that I did it in made it very clear that he wasn't going to be able to consolidation or power me because I was playing first. And so I managed to kill that Melisandre on turn 2. And that was a big, big play. But I still had to find uphill.
I also like the comparison there. I don't know if you've played Dark Souls at all, but there's a boss that's basically a giant wolf with a sword in its mouth. And that's essentially what that is.
Yep. Actually, we had a very serious debate. We were wondering whether in this situation, Lady was holding ice, or the direwolf pup was holding ice, or whether Lady was holding the direwolf pup that was holding ice.
Isn't Lady attached to the pup? So
yes.
The pup is holding up Lady, and also ice.
My goodness. So ladies riding on the pup's back while the pup is holding ice?
It's a really strong pup.
That's what fortified position is. But also this player I was playing against had many, many puns. Clams Under Westeros was not the only one. But the next day he asked me if I wanted to meet up for lunch because he was still in town. And I said that I was unfortunately under a mountain of paperwork. And he said, wow, so if you're under a mountain of paperwork, then I guess you can't be all that gregarious.
Yeah. And there's the pirate story, right? The choice.
We're not telling anyone about the pirate story. That's purely with anyone who knows the pirate story and listens to this is immediately just going to be ashamed of us.
Yeah, they might actually throw up. I mean, that's a hard decision.
Well, that's actually a pretty good intro into this. I was going to go with some sort of technical thing where it's like, hey, John, where were you last week? Why didn't we have an episode? Oh, you were at dance. But something about pirate stories making people throw up is probably a better start.
Yeah, maybe. You know what the coolest thing is? While I was at dance, we met up with the Brotherhood, we met up with a bunch of other people, and they kept referring to Sean as the guy from Beyond the Wall, and not me. And it's kind of apropos, isn't it, Alex?
First of all, you used the words apropos. I'm impressed. And second of all, well, the words Sean and John, they're fairly interchangeable. Especially to a non-Anglophone, you could definitely see the two.
I mean, it's totally look the same too, right? Like, we're both handsome.
Yeah. It's clearly just a big mistake.
I'm going to say you're both equally handsome.
I don't know if Sean's sad right now.
A little part of me is dying inside, although I think the words pretty usually go better than handsome.
We are joined by a fourth guest. Patrick, how's it going?
So it's pretty good. Pretty good, south of the wall. Nice and warm.
Now, Patrick just couldn't get enough of being team right. You're team right.
I don't even know. Who can keep track?
Does it change, or is it always one?
No, it's the same, but I can't even keep track of the cards. Like, left and right, one of them gets a power icon. I don't even call them left and right. It's like the power icon one. But I think I'm team right. I'm like 50% sure.
I'm mostly going to be taking the back seat this episode, because I think the plan is to talk about dance and possibly, apparently, pirates throwing up.
No, we're not going to talk about
I'm the odd man out who wasn't there.
Now, if you want to talk about the mountain, Alex, we can talk about the mountain and how he would be able to take pirates pretty easily. Like, I think the mountain would be equivalent to, what, like 3 or 4 ships of pirates?
At least. Can I take this time to say that the mountain jokes are my favorite part of Beyond the Wall, and that I almost cried when you cut them out, Alex, of that one episode.
What if I told you that there weren't actually any, and I just put in static because John couldn't think of a mountain joke?
You'd be lying.
I would be very disappointed, and now I don't know who to believe.
Alex would be lying.
Alex would never do a thing like that.
Alex is a scientist, John. He can't lie.
All right. Well, let's pull this slightly back to dance. Now, all of you were at dance. All of you did fairly well. I'm looking at the stats. It's one of the few things I can do. But I think we should probably start before that and sort of maybe what you guys were expecting going into dance and how you prepared. Maybe starting with Patrick?
Sure. I was expecting a pretty tough field. I knew that John was coming down from Canada and that the New York meta itself is pretty competitive. I'd heard that those Brotherhood guys had won some tournaments there, and so I was expecting them to be there. So, and then 2 weeks from now, I'm going to the Walsall Regional. So I had pretty much 2 back-to-back pretty competitive tournaments. So I went pretty hard in testing and figuring out what deck to bring. And then I played a lot of games with the deck I ended up playing before the tournament.
We were kind of lucky in that Patrick, Sean, and I all tested a little bit together. So though we all brought different decks, we shared ideas and we tweaked each other's decks. And I think that added a lot to our end products.
Absolutely. The big, have we revealed the name of our secret Illuminati club?
Sure. You can reveal the name, Sean.
The did pretty well. I think technically Aaron revealed it in his ramblings when he's like, oh, six.
Yeah, I don't think he said the name. I think he just said our build group and nobody knew what he was talking about. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't say that on this cast. You can bleep that.
It's okay, we're good at editing.
No one knew what he was talking about, I agree.
We can also edit out the name if we want to keep it.
Yeah, you should just bleep the name and leave the onion.
So that seems to be a lot of players from the build group being in a tournament. Was 80% of the field the build group?
No, there was
no.
How many 34 players or something? There were 7 of us.
Yeah, there was a lot of New Jersey. There was a lot of.
I mean,
local
6 of us made
guys.
The top 8, so that's pretty good. And Lauren got sick, so.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good too.
Well, no, that was sad. I was very sad that Lauren got sick, but I mean, she had to drop.
So Patrick mentioned that he tested a lot with the deck, and that you guys were expecting certain players to be there. But what about the meta at this point? What kind of decks were you guys testing against to know that you'd made the right call? We have a lot of listeners going into their first big tournaments. What do you expect the field to be prior to Dance, and how did that match up with reality?
I expected a lot of Lannister, obviously. Lannister Greyjoy was extremely popular, and the natural counter to Lannister was actually Vera. Vera plays fantastically against the standard Lannister. And we thought that there would be, a bunch of Lannister, and some of the better players would decide to bring Vera. So we brought decks that played either well against Lannister, like myself. I played a Baratheon deck, or we played something that could do well against Vera, like Sean brought, or what Patrick brought.
Ironically, my one loss of the day was to Vera. That did not go as well as we had hoped.
You had the Lannister house card, man. And Lannister loses to Vera.
Yeah, but The Lannister dragon was specifically supposed to not do that.
Yeah, I know. But it seems Vera is Lannister's counter.
Or you're just really good at this game, John.
No, we won't indulge in that fantasy. So I think a lot of people have talked about Lanny and have talked about counters to Lanny. John, you're mentioning that it's a good counter. It plays well against it. Care to highlight some of the reasons why?
Well, I mean, Lannister right now is about these huge, beefy guys that have a big impact, and they're playing a lot of dupes. So if you can kneel out their one or two key characters, you can just basically, walk all over them. They really need that Tywin, Tyrion, and the Mountain to participate in challenges. And if you can get one or two of those down, their deck is way less scary, because then they just have these kind of middle-of-the-road chud. They're not like Night's Watch, where they have this fantastic, four-coster raiding party, or even Baratheon has a six-strength four-coster. The rest of their guys are just not that great. If you look at Greyjoy, for instance, what Sean was playing, I couldn't beat that deck for my life with Baratheon. And how many games did we play, Sean? We played maybe 5 or 6 the night before while we were drinking that rye with Dan.
Yep. I think we had finished the entire bottle of rye at Dan's request. We did a good job.
Sean, maybe you can touch on why the deck does well against Vera if it's a Greyjoy dragon. What advantages does it lever against Neil?
I think the deck I'm playing does particularly well, I'm still in New York mode, that I played did particularly well against Vera because of Illyrio. And his ability to just not give a single damn about Neil. You flip calling the banner, you get your gold, you trigger Illyrio. You go into the draw phase, you trigger Illyrio. You go into the marshalling phase, you trigger Illyrio. You go into challenges, you trigger Illyrio. Everyone is standing. You don't have, you're putting your board out early, and it might be getting knelt, but you're getting all the pieces you need and locations. And in particular, the Greyjoy Dragon, what it does is it's all about target removal. You're pulling out the links of the chain that are blocking you from getting things through or from winning the game, and you can just clean up their board as soon as you have that one turn, usually a weapons at the door turn. We can talk about that later if you want to talk about the super secret sauce. And you can clear the board.
It also has a fact to do with the boats. These boats are standing back up if your characters aren't. You can kneel a character easily in Vera, but you can't manage a boat. And, some of these boats really allows him to keep pushing those challenges through with fewer characters. And if it's Asha that he's standing up and getting through and you're not able to kneel her, then she's going to be repeatedly standing up thanks to those boats. So there's just a lot of little things that basically result in it being very hard to control Greyjoy with Neil, which I didn't think was the case before, but I think is now they've kind of hit this critical mass on the boats.
And so, Patrick, you were playing Lannister, which Vera was supposed to beat, according to John, and then you said your version was supposed to beat Vera. How did that work out?
Well, it was supposed to be Bera for basically the same reason that Sean's deck was supposed to be Bera. It had Magister Illyrio, and especially with Tyrion, he's really nuts. Standing people in multiple phases is really difficult for Bera usually. But unfortunately, the game that I played against Bera, I was playing against John, and he double milked Tywin on turn one. And my deck was a little too dependent on Tywin Gold, I think. So that really hurt me in that game. But I think typically my deck can handle the Kneel of Bera pretty well.
Yeah, and I think the double milk, you know, a lot of people will probably see the recording where we were playing Patrick and think that that was a mistake on my part to double milk. But actually, because I knew your deck, because we played so much, I knew it was extremely important actually for me to put out the two milk. One, I didn't want to pull from Intrigue Challenge. And second, I didn't want to give you a single turn of that extra gold. So I was willing to, you know, suck it up and just double milk and say, okay, he's not going to play his Confiscation now, but I don't care. You know, I just need to shut him down or I'm going to lose. And I basically was talking to you before, and I said, this is a horrible matchup for me, but maybe if I get two milk, I might have a chance. And there it was on turn one. It was pretty sweet.
Yep. Worked out pretty well.
I think that was, for me, that was a demonstration of thinking outside of the box with these games. When I saw that move, it makes so much sense when you see it and you hear the reasons. But the moment, you might think, like, that's a bit strange. But then a second later, you realize, like, it dawns on you, you know, it's the extra gold. That's what makes Tywin so amazing. And by shutting that down, giving him no chance to recover from it, I mean, you're not going to claim Tywin. And I assume you're not running Tower of the Hand. So it's not like this is going to be something easy to get around. I don't know. It's those unorthodox plays that really tip the favor in matches that you just slam dunk.
Cutting Magister Illyrio. Or not Magister Illyrio, the Rattleshore Raiders.
Oh, the Raiders. Yeah.
But even with the Raiders, if you threw him down and he has one Kneel, he could get the Raiders out of the way.
It's very true. Bera tends not to care about Rattleshirt Raiders if they have some Kneel.
Now, there are two other players of that play group that made the cut, and both of them were playing Stark. So what was the reasoning behind having some Stark relative to this Rock, Paper, Scissors games that you're describing already?
Well, there was actually three of them that made it, because Dan made it as well, running...
Yeah, but he was playing Greyjoy Dragon.
The Greyjoy Dragon, yeah. The Stark in general was basically, we wanted to try Stark, we wanted to get some data on it, we wanted to see how it would do. There were two different builds, actually, they weren't the same. And Stark is, I find right now, in a place in the meta where it's a very good generalist. It's not extremely good in any one facet, and that was kind of similar to the old Stark, actually, if you think about it. They were kind of just efficient, and I think that Stark's there now. It's at this efficient place. Is it, you know, one of the top three builds? Maybe not yet, but, you know, a couple packs from now, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I hear they're getting a pretty good card in this next pack, so...
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember which Stark card it is.
Ward.
Ward is good, yes.
Just in advance, I want to say, poor Theon.
Goodbye.
I loved you, but Ward is going to really suck.
Yeah, and I love how nudly that is.
Yeah, especially the part where it throws Stark affiliation on them.
Yep.
So now they can do all their sacrifice effects. So Theon being warded and then sacrificed for some sort of Stark restand, like, you know, for the greater good.
It doesn't quite feel like a sacrifice when it's your opponent's character, does it?
Because I think we're missing a very important part. I mean, me and Sean drove down for 7.5 hours at 6. I woke up at, I don't know, 5:20 in the morning. I don't know what time he woke up to get ready when I picked him up. I forgot my passport, so we got to go back. That was fun. But we spent the night before, like we said, having a ride with Dan and convincing him not to play his Night's Watch deck, which was a good thing because he ended up making top four with the Greyjoy. And
he ended up making top two.
Oh, right, top two. That's right, he beat me pretty badly. And
maybe you should have had him play the Night's Watch.
Yeah, might have been better for me.
Or drink more rye.
He was my only loss of the day, yeah. But... I mean, the day when we got in, I don't know about you, Sean, we didn't have coffee.
Yeah.
So I was like a zombie. We had driven all day the day before. We had gone to bed late. Not super late, but late enough. We had woken up really early to get into this place because, of course, Dan and Roy are running it. So we have to be in early enough to set things up for Dan. And I was just like, I think I played the worst games of my life in the first two rounds. Like, it was so bad. Like, it was to the point where I was like, okay, so I count, you count X number of gold. And my opponent actually said to me, you know, you have another row of characters under the first row. And I went, oh yeah, those guys I haven't been using. Like, just completely out of it. And then there was a lunch break and we went and caffeinated, and that was so much better. But I'm ashamed of my play, and it's on camera. So people can watch that and be like, oh my God, that's horrible. And I apologize now to all viewers that are going to watch that on Dennis's channel. Now, contrary to that, when I played Patrick, I think we both played a great game later in the day. But man, it was...
So he's saying skip the first match, don't watch it, go watch the match with Patrick.
Yeah, but it was rough. Like, did you feel a little rough there, Sean?
Absolutely. I think, and the worst part is I was so decaffeinated, I didn't even notice how tired I was. It just felt like I was just really temporarily stupid. And well,
you're hoping temporarily.
I feel temporarily because later on I was playing better. To make it even, you know, cherry on the top, my first match was against Joe from the Brotherhood Without Manners. And they were playing their, you know, their deck that they've made popular, the Lannister Kraken. When we had previously, I had been discussing this with John. I'm like, well, okay, my deck does really badly against that deck. We know that for a fact. It's almost like, you know, a 60-40 or worse or something in their favor. Probably worse, especially if they get the setup that he got. He had Tywin on setup, duped. So now I'm like, okay, I'm in this fog and I'm playing against this deck that's really bad for me. I think the match went really quick. But at the end of the day, I mean, I only had two losses, and it was to the same deck piloted by the guys who made it popular. So there's no real shame in that. Although the match with Keith, I wish it had been recorded, because it might have been my favorite game of the whole tournament, even though I lost. The amount of mind games I had to play to keep alive. Just as some background, I had a two-card setup with one character. I had Miri on the board with a sea tower, and of course, turn one, he marches. And I know he's going to march. Why would I put out a Miri 7-coster? I think it was Joe asking this afterwards, if I have cheaper characters in hand. And the reason is I had 3 Risens from the setup and from the drawback. So I knew that if I played Asher or Balin and they were marched, I might not draw into them. And if I play Miri, there's no protection from their target kills or military kills. And I'm not going to have a big board because all they have is a sea tower. Also, I have a sea tower, Greyjoy Reducer. I've got 3 Risens. So I throw Miri basically to the wind or under the boat or
bus,
whatever the expression is. It's under the boat because it's Greyjoy.
Okay.
And then I marshaled, I think it was Asha or Balin. I think it was Asha. And I just started doing as much as I could to keep in the game. And at one point I had more power than him on, I think it was like turn 3 or 4. And it was actually looking pretty good for me. Ultimately, what did me in was the Tears of Lys on Balin, not having any more saves, having burned them all earlier to try and keep in the game at all. But like the amount of mind games I played, it was great. He literally looked at me and he's like, why do you still have any cards? This isn't how it's supposed to be with a one card setup. But that was a lot of fun. You know, he deserved the win. He and the Brotherhood guys have built a pretty good deck, and it's a good answer to mine.
So overall, how'd you guys do in Swiss? So Patrick, you only took the one loss. Is that correct?
Yep.
So, and Sean, you said you lost 2 times to the Brotherhood and then just missed the cut, right? I think, what did you end up placing, 10th or something?
Yeah, I was 10th overall, 2 losses. So
and
4-2.
The person just ahead of you was Sandy, who actually played one of the Brotherhood guys in the final round of Swiss. And I saw the most powerful Varus I've ever seen. So Sandy had been playing as if he didn't have any Varus in his whole deck the whole time. He was just throwing out characters left, right, and center. And he had a duped Mel and a duped Bob on the board. And the person he was playing played trading and just poured out the characters, like big 7-costers. He had a huge board. And then Sandy played, and he just played Varus. And the look on his face was like, oh my God. What's going to happen now? This is so bad. You could tell, like, just by the look on his face, is like, he does not have treachery. This thing is going off, and it is just a bad scene. And sure enough, he blew up the board, saving both Bob and Mel, and managed to win the game after that. But it still wasn't enough to put him in the cut because of his strength of schedule. But it was just such an epic scene to watch unfold. It was interesting. I managed to top a Swiss, which was awesome. It means I was very comfortable going in, and I played Roy, who was playing a Stark Fealty in the cut, Patrick, who was your first cut game?
My first cut game was Keith, right? Yeah. So that was the second time that I played against the Lanny Kraken deck. I played against Joe in Swiss, and it went pretty well. We did go to time, but I did manage to get the 15th power on that last round. I felt pretty in control the whole time. We both milked each other's Tywins, but I had confiscation and he did not. So I had a pretty big econ advantage from just having Tywin. And then he played first snow and played out Asha and was going first and had Tyrion. And I'm pretty sure that his plan was to play Put to the Sword, but I milked Tyrion that turn as well. And that was pretty much the whole game because he couldn't generate any econ and I had my Tywin going. And so it was pretty much downhill from there for him. But he played a really good game. There was a lot of bluffing events back and forth and, you know, figuring out, trying to figure out whether or not each of us had certain events. And because we both, I mean, I knew his deck pretty well. I've seen their list. And, you know, obviously I'm playing Lannister, so I'm probably running at least 5 kill events, so he knew to, you know, have to play around those. And it was a very interesting game, and he played it very well. There was a time when I was definitely going to Put to the Sword Tywin and treachery his Iron Mines, and he was smart enough to not let me do that, even though it hurt him that turn. But ultimately, it was by far the correct choice. So it was a very good game.
My first two matches were actually against Baratheon, which I knew there was going to be some of. I was ready for that in running stuff like Ours is the Fury, which I think is a great anti-Baratheon card when you're Baratheon, because, of course, if you go second or if they've knelt down your guy, that you can get them back up. And it paid some dividends for me in both those matches, which was nice. Both players were really nice guys. I think they knew each other from the same meta. And I had a great time playing them, but the match of the day was probably, either my great 2-milk draw against Patrick or playing against Dan in the fact that he just schooled me, just outplayed me at every turn. And it's sometimes tough for people to admit that, but I'm totally willing to admit that Dan outplayed me. And, I was frustrated with myself because Lauren was sitting and watching the game and I said, oh no, I just did the wrong thing. And Dan kind of smiles and Lauren goes, what do you mean? Oh, yeah, I would have done that too. Don't feel bad about that. You know, like.
So. Can you give some examples? Because I know that.
Yeah, a great example.
Being outplayed is something that people need to learn to recognize too.
Yeah. So Dan was playing the Greyjoy, so he had a bunch of these boats that allowed him to cancel challenges. And a really simple thing was, you know, when you're playing Baratheon, your tendency to kneel when you have to kneel your own characters for the event, for example, for Even-Handed Justice, you choose something like one of your little Ralor characters that's going to stand back up. And Dan, I don't know how to put it, but he almost intimated that that would be a good idea. And of course, what it did was it reduced my military icon count to a point where his boats in the challenge phase would be able to push through a military challenge. And I did it, and then we got into the challenge phase, and I went, oh my god, I don't have enough military icons now. And, you know, it's a good idea because they stand back up, and I'm going to get dominance from them, and they were my smallest character, but I really should have knelt a bigger character at that point in the game to ensure that I had enough military icons, because he had the Sea Stone Chair, and if he got that unopposed military, he was going to kill my Mel, which he did, which didn't mean that I could win the game if I had kept Mel on the board, but it gave me a fighting chance. Without Mel, it was just all a giant snowball downhill. And the fact that he was constantly putting me in these really hard decisions like that, where I had to pick what's not obviously the optimal play to actually stay in the game, can make things difficult. So, you know, kudos. And he makes choices that aren't obvious. You know, people, when they search for a location, might search for the draw location immediately or generate extra power, but he was taking the better decisions, even if it was a lower cost location to come into play, like the boats, because he knew it would put me in a situation where I had to make more and more decisions. And he basically overwhelmed me with these decisions to the point where I made a bad one. And only Dan can really grind people out like that, where he can keep track of those 342 decisions and saying, okay, if he makes any one of these wrongs, I'm going to be able to exploit it, and this is how I'm going to do it. And I felt that he was always in that mindset, and I just wasn't there. And sometimes I'm on my game, and I wasn't on it as much as I would have liked to when I was playing Dan.
The great thing about that deck is the flexibility, the support of the people, mid challenges, as long as you can get that, you know, 5 strength power challenge off, which is pretty easy with Balin and the boats, you can modify the board on the fly. Am I going to get more benefit of Great Kraken, drawing cards, getting power, or giving Balin stealth, or the cancel strength of defenders, or the sea stone? So many times I've done that where, you know, opponents will be comfortable, and they'll be like, well, you know, I'm fine here. He can get the military through because I can choose the claim. 5 power, push through, sea stones on the table. Everything is forever different.
Yeah, that's the issue, right? So, you know, you're looking at the board state and you're saying, okay, so I can defend the military. I have 3 guys. He can only stealth 1, therefore I'll have 2. He can only 0 out 1. Okay, he's pushing through the power challenge, but I can't really block it because I have to keep my icon standing. He wins. He brings in another boat. That second boat allows him to negate both my military icons. I should have blocked the power, you know, and it just kind of the description you gave was very apt, Sean, where there, you know, you build a wall to stop this target kill from the Sea Stone Chair. And with the new cards, the Greyjoy player can say, okay, so if I win a power challenge, that lets me take out this block. That'll let me get this, which will let me take out that block. Now he can't win military. Then I can kill that. Now I can win the intrigue because that character is dead. And all of a sudden, he's gotten all 3 challenges unopposed, and you're just kind of whimpering. And Dan was extremely good at seeing all those permutations and then choosing the best one. And that's how I felt I was outplayed.
Man, Dan sounds invincible. How did you beat him, Patrick?
Well, I tell you what, I did not outplay Dan. I just drew the God hand for my deck. Like, I could not believe the cards that I drew in that final game. First of all, I think my setup was duped Tywin, Chud, and a Rose Road.
Of course.
So right off the bat, I'm like, all right, this hasn't happened all day. This is the time for it to happen. Let's do this. And then I think in the first turn, I played Miri, Mazdur, and then in the first turn, I played Jaime and Tyrion.
Oh my God.
I played Trading with the Pentoshi and played Jaime and Tyrion. And then turn 2, I played Miri, duped. And I had Put to the Sword, Treachery, and Hand's Judgment to cancel his Sea Stone Chair, Risen from the Sea, and kill Balon and Asha. So I could not have stacked my deck better than that. It was just insanely lucky. And so, yeah, it was a little hollow of a victory, but I'll take it.
Because in testing, the Greyjoy wins versus Patrick's deck a lot. Like probably 60% of the time, 65% of the time it wins.
Mm-hmm.
How many virgins and goats did you have to sacrifice for that kind of luck?
It was a lot. You know, the goats are more expensive than you'd think, so.
And I guess virgins are pretty easy to come by in card communities, so I shouldn't be too surprised.
They're everywhere.
They do never specify the gender of the virgins.
True.
Yeah, so overall, I think the field was what we were expecting, which is good. The decks we brought were pretty effective. I mean, I really actually enjoyed mine. I thought it was a good deck, a good Baratheon deck. Patrick, Sean, and I all have a regional on the 14th. So we may or may not take those decks again.
Yeah, I love my deck. And it's Greyjoy. I'd like to actually win with Greyjoy. That would be like, if you play Lannister, no offense, Patrick, it's sort of like the easy mode of this game.
True.
I have to agree.
No offense taken. It's an accurate statement.
But so I think we're all going to be going to these regionals, different ones. Patrick, you're going to which one?
Wausau.
So you have to compete against Sam Bratz as Jank.
I do. I don't want to lose to Sam Bratz again. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't want to lose in another final to Sam Bratz.
You know, he might be your nemesis, and that would be awesome because nemesis are fun.
Nemesis?
Nemesis.
Nemesi?
Nemesi?
Yeah. I don't know.
It's not MSI, that's for sure.
I used my one dictionary word for the day. Okay, Alex, my one dictionary word's gone. So.
I believe it is nemesis, like hypotheses.
All right.
So I guess I assume you guys will be willing to post the list if you after that upcoming tournament.
Yeah, assuming I'm not going to another one, I'm still debating whether I'm going to try to make the Toronto one the week after, but within 3 weeks, because I'm actually, as you know, Alex, I'm flying to Florida, so there's no way I'll be changing my list from whatever I play in Rochester.
So I guess
we're really having time to post anything, to be honest, for that week because I won't be in town.
The question sort of becomes, is there, given what you did at Dance and how the meta may or may not change, do you expect the meta to change? Are there tweaks that you'd make to your deck without having posted the deck list, but things, cards that you felt overperformed or underperformed relative to what you were expecting that, you might adjust accordingly?
Personally, I loved my deck. There might be one or two cards. I can't think of anything specifically. Nothing played poorly, and everything kind of clicked. I really enjoyed the deck. So I don't think it'd make any changes. I mean, it's bad matchups, but it does really well against Lannister, and I think every Baratheon player will be able to say that in general, when you sit across from Lannister with Baratheon, you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, I don't think I'd change anything either. We have the cards that we need to do the thing that we do. I think the deck that I'm playing, or I played rather, is pretty straightforward. It has one objective, and it's going to open you up like a taco if it can.
Like a taco.
Right, like a taco.
And
classic open tacos.
Do you have any changes you'd make?
I might like to get some Rattleshirt Raiders in the deck. Like I said, the old double milk on Tywin, I have literally no way to stop that. If that happens, there is absolutely nothing my deck can do, and it is very detrimental, so I think I may be trying to add one or two Rattleshirt Raiders to potentially stop that whole situation. But outside of that, I really like the deck. I think it handles pretty well. I'm a little nervous about how it will play against Varus decks, and I have a feeling that a certain someone likes Varus decks who plays in Wausau. And I'm a little scared about that, but we'll see how it goes. I'm excited to try it out there.
Well, I think he's told me of his latest creation, but I don't know whether it's a Varus deck or not. It's interesting. It's probably not what anyone expects.
That's good.
Which should be fun, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I do want to make a couple of points because people have talked about the impact of, for instance, First Snow of Winter. Now, which of your decks were running First Snow of Winter? All of yours? Or all but the Barra?
Mine wasn't, actually. The Greyjoy deck doesn't run First Snow.
It's very First Snow resistant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm usually pleased when my opponent plays First Snow, but because the boats and the stealth and the Balon, the Chuds don't really matter. It's like whose line is it anyways? Opening quote, like the points don't matter. You've got the Rig Longship and the Chuds just don't matter. Or rather the Balon. You've got the Balon and the Chuds just don't matter.
My deck was playing First Snow because it's Lannister. Lannister.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
And I was bannered to Lion, so I had a lot of anti-First Snow stuff, but I didn't run First Snow myself, obviously. I think, in general, Baratheon doesn't. But in general, also, Baratheon, if it's built with it in mind, can do very well in the First Snow meta, so I wasn't afraid of First Snow at all.
And then Sean mentioned another plot that I was quite interested to hear a little bit more about, and that is...
The Secret Sauce.
Yeah, secret that's sauce. Our Secret okay. Sauce.
That was everybody's secret sauce?
Well, no, that was our secret sauce for that deck, yeah.
Secret sauce for this deck. So yeah, no one saw it coming. When Weapons of the Door came out, everyone was like, what's that card? Can I read it? Oh, what? Oh, interesting. Like it was the reaction of like seeing it for the first time. The high initiative, the effect, it meant that nobody could, drop more attachments in the Marshall League phase. Or if they did, they made a goof. The seals weren't going to stay around. No milks, no frozen solids, no... Widow's Wail going back is kind of bad because then they can replay it. But Widow's Wail is really bad for my deck anyways. It's the only example I can think of that really sucks for Weapons at the Door. Everything else is pretty money.
It just gives you this one turn where you can control the whole board, and you don't have to worry about, like Sean was saying, the milk on your character or the weapons preventing your boats from triggering. You just kind of have this. And don't forget, for Greyjoy, that thing's got a great initiative.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I really do like plotting Greyjoy in my Greyjoy deck right now. So I guess it was not secret to me, I suppose.
You're just too cool, Alex. I think that a lot of people were not expecting how good it is. Now that they've seen it, they probably realize it, but...
They were just tricked. It's FFG's new policy of putting art for the wrong faction on. So you're like, first no winner, that's definitely a Night's Watch card. Oh, right, no. And then Weapons at the Door. Oh, that's definitely a Targ card. No.
Yeah, that's a Greyjoy card, folks. A really exactly. good one. Yeah.
They just didn't want to give it away.
The synergies with the Raying Longships require no attachments, and Seastone, which requires no attachments. Yeah, I don't think I mentioned that. That's like the most important part.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I guess that's dance, but there must be a dance after party, an after dance party.
There was. I mean, the final was done with Patrick and Dan in the bar, and I don't think Patrick was super excited about that because he can't drink, right, Patrick?
Very true. Bars are a lot less fun when you can't drink.
Why can't Patrick drink?
Because Patrick's 20 and the drinking age is 21 in America.
Why? Barbarians. It's true. Right. They are barbarians. It's outrageous. Yeah. Why would they do this to any human being?
In Canada, in Quebec, it's if you can get to the bar, you're of age. So, you know, baby seat and all.
In America, don't they? They'll give you a gun and send you to war, but you can't take a drink.
To ease the pain.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was carded, actually. Twice.
You were carded, John.
Twice.
My goodness.
Immediately after you were carded, I remember this, they didn't card me.
They were like, if they're with him, he's old. Let him in. Oh, that's
but hilarious. It turns out that Sean can be John's dad.
I guess. There was an after party, so we went drinking, and then after that, Aaron came out to join the festivities for the night, and of course that meant that we ended up at karaoke.
Of course. It goes without saying.
Tradition.
And that karaoke place has this most excellent deal that you can pay, you know, $7 for a beer or $10 for 5 shots. So you can imagine what happened.
A lot of shots happened.
Yes.
I did imagine that's what he meant. Yes.
I just want to fill in that there's no vagueness here. Just a lot of shots.
So this was the inaugural dance. It also, I think, meant that you walked away with some really cool prizes there, Patrick, right?
I did. I walked away with some awesome prizes. I walked away with a really slick playmat that has some great art on it and is probably going to be my go-to playmat now. Although that Worlds one is still really cool as well. And then I also walked in with some awesome replica dragon eggs that look suspiciously like bombs on an x-ray machine.
How was the flight?
As I was as you were going home in the airport. So luckily, my flight was delayed like 3 hours, so it was completely irrelevant. But I was stopped by the TSA. And I think the TSA officer thought I was a giant nerd for having dragon eggs.
So he thought correctly.
So he thought correctly.
Yeah, and I thought exactly accurate.
Okay, every time we go across the border, we meet a border guard who has, you know, a number of questions for you. They're very no-nonsense, very serious business. And every time we're like, we just like straight up, right up front, we've learned now. We're like, we're nerds. We're going to Game of Thrones to play like a non-moneyed card tournament. It's not gambling. And now when we give, you know, that much friendlier than that, of course, I sound a little angry.
Game of Thrones nerds. Leave us alone.
When you give that summary, you get a faster response than, oh, we're going to go play in a card tournament. Because then the questions are, how much money is at stake? How much money are you bringing? How much are you going to bring back?
Yeah. And this time, I actually, like, we declared everything too. I'm like, we're going to this tournament. It's a geek thing. We can't win money. I have a 26er of rye that I'm giving to the person we're staying with. They're like, okay, go through. The time before, they're quizzing me because I just said a card game. How much money? What are you doing? I'm like, no, it's Game of Thrones. I explained that. And he was like, is Jon Snow dead? And I'm I'm sitting there like, what? Who? Oh my God. Why would you ask that? I'm so confused.
It was so stressful. There was like tension in the air. And we're thinking, who's Jon Snow? Did we kill someone?
Because he asked like 20 questions.
If you say it wrong, they don't let you across.
Yeah. 20 questions and then right at the end, you don't get it right. Is Jon Snow dead? And I'm like, my name's Jon. What are we talking about?
So. Yeah, it's true that they invariably pick a sleeve pack of cards on the x-rays and ask you about it, and then it's always the, oh, it's a card game. Oh, how much money are you? It's like, oh, no, yeah, no, we don't win money.
Yeah, ever. We get eggs, which we can resell for probably nothing.
You mean bombs?
Yeah, right. That's what it is, bombs.
don't tell the TSA agent.
Dragon terrorism. It hatches on the plane, yep. And everyone dies in fire.
Some wildfire.
Exactly. But no, they're the eggs are awesome, and I think I'm going to make it a pre-tournament tradition to try to hatch those bad boys before I go to a major tournament.
I want a video of you still.
Again, this is sacrifice of virgins and goats, then?
Yeah, it's gonna take the place of that. I'm just going to, instead of sacrificing the virgins and the goats, I figure I might as well just get some dragons, so I'll probably take a little video of myself trying to hatch him.
And, so on the news, we're going to see 20-year-old Wisconsin resident Patrick Haynes burned himself alive today.
Yep, exactly. Burn his house down trying to hatch fake dragon eggs.
Well, you didn't know they were fake at the time.
Fair enough.
Not until it didn't work.
It was a tragic realization as the house crumbled around.
Alternatively, the news that a 20-year-old resident Patrick Haynes has hatched three dragons. A little bit of a different story.
Yeah, that
wouldn't be better. Not necessarily any more reassuring.
Does that mean the White Walkers would hit us first, though, because we're in the north? I don't like this idea.
Yeah, definitely. You guys are screwed.
I just picture like a bald Patrick there with the three dragons rising from the flames.
Fully nude, yeah.
So Patrick, you said you were going to a regional. Do you have any other regionals or big events planned? You going to Gen Con?
I am going to Gen Con. I have this regional and then Bupkis until Gen Con. So I'm going to basically retreat to my hermit cave and just start building some decks for Gen Con. And I might even play Melee. I just learned that was a format so that people play. So
it's a great format. It's actually a lot of fun.
No, it really is. I love playing Melee, but I cannot get a group of people together to play Melee to save my life. Like I'll post on my local meta like, hey, anybody want to play some games this Thursday? And everybody's like, oh yeah, sure, why not? I'm getting off of work at 5. And then I post like, hey, does anybody want to play Melee during the regular time that we always meet every week? And there's just nothing. No replies. I like show up. I'm like, hey, guys, you want to play? And everybody's already playing Joust. I'm like, okay, never mind.
See, I have a completely different experience on my end. It's just we sit down, and if there's an odd man out, then there's a three-person Melee table. And then that's just how it goes. Everyone's playing.
That's so such a better system.
Half of our games are Melee.
What happens here is if there's an odd man out, too bad you're the odd man out.
Yep. Yeah, too bad. You're going to Jimmy John's outside to get some food. That's it.
Well, we play at a bar, so it's time to drink.
Last time I showed up, I actually played Mike twice in a row, and the same person had to watch twice in a row. He's like, no, I want to try again. I'm like, okay. The other person's like, oh.
I'm incredibly jealous of your league name.
Thank you.
The Legends of Gin Alley.
Yeah, I really wish I'd have thought of that. And it also, every time I see it, it makes me sad that we'll never have him as a card because he doesn't exist in the books. I just want that flavor text so bad. And he could be a good Night's Watch card. They need those.
I think if we give Night's Watch good cards, then they might start winning games.
Yeah, we don't want that.
That's why he'll never exist. It's not because he doesn't exist in the books. It's because Night's Watch can't get good cards.
Right, exactly. He'd have to be a good card.
With that flavor text, and be a bad card.
I did actually want to throw one thing in there. I wanted to give a shout out to Andrew Kim from New York, who not only helped me operate the ATM, but get into the bank before I had any drinks.
Well, this sounds like a story.
So I don't know where the bank is, but I do know which bank is basically like a sister bank to my bank. I know which bank I need to go to get money for, you know, going to the bar afterwards. And I ask around, and Andrew knows where the bank is, and he says it's nearby. And he gives me directions. And the expectation then for adults is that you'll go off and go to the bank and come back. But New York is scary, and I'm far too pretty to go alone, and the streets are too packed. So he came with me.
Yeah, Sean, you definitely asked me to come with you to a 7-Eleven. Because it was right across the street and you didn't want to go.
Yeah, I need coffee and you wouldn't come with me.
Yeah.
I looked for...
Well, because I don't drink coffee, so what was I going to do? I didn't know you at that point. Now I would gladly accompany you to a 7-Eleven. That's
stranger danger. So at any rate, he walked me to the bank. We get to the bank door and you have to slide your card to get it open, but I didn't know that. So I was confused first off because in Canada you can just enter banks. You don't need to be like an affiliate of the bank to go in.
Yeah, it's just a New York thing. Like I was in New York maybe like a month ago, and I was talking to my girlfriend who lives there, and I was like, I should go to an ATM, and she's like, you cannot get into any banks that have ATMs because they all require you to scan your card. And I was like, what? It makes no sense. Because here in Madison, there are just like ATMs just like outside of banks. You don't even need to go in the bank.
That's how it operates here too.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it, but maybe like
New York
vagrancy or like robbery. There's a lot of people. It's scary. There's a reason I want to go alone. So
it's true. That's
you're
fair.
Too young to die.
Yeah, exactly. That's and I don't have any dragon eggs to burn myself with, so it'd be useless.
You wouldn't even make the news, unfortunately.
So we got into the bank because someone was inside and they opened the door for me, seeing my struggle and confusion, I suppose. And I go to the ATM. And I slide the card in, and I'm just watching like airplane advertisements going for like 2 minutes. Must have been at least 2 minutes, and nothing's actually happening. And I look at Andrew, and he's like, "What's wrong?" And I pull the card out, and it says, "You know, you didn't have your card in there long enough for reader error or something." So I try a different card. Same thing happens, and finally he comes over and he takes the card and he jams it in real hard, and it works immediately, no issues. So I like thought about it and I'm like, well, clearly what happened here is that in New York, all the machines have been so abused that you need to like have that New York mentality and just like jam it in there. And naturally that's that's what she said joke came from. But basically I couldn't have gotten any money, for the bar if it weren't for Andrew, not only acting tour guide, but operating the machine for me. So thank you again.
Holding your hand.
I think we should shout out to Dan and Roy. They ran a great event. Dance was really well
run.
Really amazing. I know that Patrick actually requested that for a little bit extra time, but because the store was closing, they couldn't give that because he wanted to ensure that he played out the full game in the cut to give his opponent every opportunity to try to win it, which was cool. I can understand also from Dan and Roy's perspective how they were on a pretty tight time schedule. We only had 50 minutes for lunch. That was probably the one negative part.
That was a quick lunch.
It's true. I had some chicken nuggets.
I had a bread bowl with like soup in it at Panera, and it was so good. It was so good.
Panera's good.
Yeah.
Shout out to Panera.
There is. Shout out to Panera. Panera Bread Company. This podcast sponsored by Panera Bread Company, but not actually
giving us any money. I think I take objection to this definition of sponsorship.
Aren't we like equally sponsored by Fantasy Flight then?
We're equally sponsored by a lot of things.
This podcast brought to you by Andrew Kim.
There we go.
That's closer to reality. I probably would have died on the streets of New York if it weren't for Andrew Kim.
Makes sense.
Sean Emberley brought to you by Andrew Kim. Sponsored for life.
We're going to have to add every episode like that now.
Well, Sean, what did you bring to the episode? Sponsorship messages? Oh, sponsorships? No, just sponsorship messages. So it looks like we may get True Steel, the last chapter pack of this cycle, on the 19th. And that's just based on it being 4 weeks after Combo Westeros. And we have two spoilers to share with you, one of which is amazing and awesome and unexpected, and one of which is fine and expected. Which one should we start with?
The awesome and expected one?
Really?
Yeah, I think we should lead with the expected and then drop that bomb for the last one.
Yeah.
Lead with the expected. Yeah, so I'll read the boring card because I'm boring. And then...
All right. And we'll let Sean, because he's the new host, read the next.
That's because there's a lot of text and John doesn't want to read it.
That's exactly right.
He may be correct.
So the card that you're probably all expecting existed, this is a Martell card, a one-cost attachment, a condition. It's called Imprisoned, and it says, opponent's character only, attached character loses a military icon. And it says, at first he had consoled himself that his imprisonment could not last long. So this rounds out the suite of, I think I mentioned, like, in the Women of Thrones episode, that if they printed a card called Imprisoned and it was Martelli, they should have a woman on the art. Do you think that we can argue that that's a woman? That shadow in the background hiding in this tower?
I mean, you could argue, but I don't know if you'd be right.
Yeah, I think if you zoom in and look at the hands, they're much more masculine than...
And the flavor quote does say he had consoled himself.
True.
So, sadly, this is another example of FFG bias throwing men into jail. Wait, no, that's probably right. This is fine. Never mind. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that despite the fact that I think a lot of people will be drawn to this attachment, that I think it's the weakest of the three.
I have to agree. I mean, I think power challenges and intrigue challenges right now are more important because of removal and actually the prevalence of military icons. No, I haven't done the math, and I'm sure you have or you will in one, you know, 20 years from now. But my gut feeling says that there are more military icons than there are the other types of icons in the game. And we see that with monocons. There are a lot of monocons that sport the military icon.
That said, though, I think I could prove my value here as being the dissenting opinion and say that in some situations, this is actually more useful, more powerful. If I can put this on the Mountain or Jaime, that's a huge swing.
Those were the two cards I was going to mention. In this Lannister meta, where they're definitely running that put to the sword pushing, it may be better at Lanny than it is than the other ones are.
Plus, what would be funnier than putting this and the power removal on the Hound, and now he just can't bounce back to hand because he can't participate
until someone plays for a Snow Winner, and then
we're not going to go that far. They're not running that card.
All right. Well, I think that wraps out Imprison. Everyone was expecting that to exist. Sean, want to give us the one where we actually have the art from this already talked about last week or 2 weeks ago on the cast, because it's a Drazenka Kimple art that she posted on her Facebook page. So who is this?
All right. First off, the artwork is amazing. I like the artist quite a bit. I don't know if they have any other art in the cards that might have been already discussed.
Oh, yeah. They have Pulling the Strings, A Noble Cause. Those are both hers.
Those are a lot of the most Nettly cards, too. Like, Pulling the Strings is one of the greatest scenes. It's actually, like, ripped from the book. I'm totally derailing from the card. All right, we have Tyne Sand. It's a Martell card. She's loyal. She's 3 strength and 6 cost with an intrigue and a power icon. A bastard sand snake, as we've grown to expect. But with a reaction, after you win an intrigue challenge in which Tyne Sand is participating as an attacker, place a poison token on a character without an intrigue icon. At the end of that phase, if that character still has that poison token, remove it and kill that character. So, infinite tears?
It's not on a stick when it's a character. It's tears with legs, right?
Yeah, that's terrifying. Yeah,
sure, tears with legs.
It is terrifying.
Yeah, she's amazing. I mean, the fact that you can just basically target kill at will, as long as you have a way to remove those intrigue icons, which I hear Martell's good at, right? Like, it's one of the things they do well.
Mm-hmm.
I think has a ton of value.
Not only that, but you don't have to win alone. You don't have to win by a certain strength. You just have to win, and she has to participate.
Now, she's expensive for her strength to cost ratio.
Mm-hmm. And she's not quite as she can't necessarily target any character in as easily as something like Miri can, which is, you know, the sort of newest removal that we're talking about. But then again, she has some Sand Snake synergy to regain icons if she needs to get back into that intrigue challenge. She has all the bastard trait really, really working well. And, you know, her being tears with legs makes perfect sense. In the books, there's a passage where Doran says something like, you know, he's talking to Tyne Sand, and then he's not even willing to pat her on the head because he's afraid of getting poisoned. Like, she's supposed to be sweet and innocent looking, and Doran won't even touch her. Pretty spot on. The one poison that we really have in the game is the one that she basically mimics as a character.
She also, you mentioned the Sand Snake synergy. She's kind of, she gets this duality from Nymeria, where Nymeria can create targets for her, like pulling an intrigue icon off Taiwan, but then she also gets her intrigue icon back from the same trigger. So she has not only the guarantee that she'll have the icon, but the guarantee she'll have a target if Nymeria is out with her, which is really cool.
I think she's just what Martell needed. Like, Martell needs something to bring them up to a top tier house. I think they were top, you know, they were just like all the houses. They were pretty competitive, but I think she'll really help a lot. I think she'll go a long way to filling some of their void.
And I'd like to mention, she's loyal, which I think is good for the house.
Yes.
It gives you, alongside Vengeance for Elia and Gaston Grey and Tyene, there's now several reasons to be running Martell as your main faction. We were seeing more Martell because Crossing sort of forces you to play only Martell. If you want to play Crossing out of Martell, obviously you just can't banner. But we were still mostly seeing Martell in other places as a banner. And again, I think that both Vengeance for Elia, which we just saw and is beginning to affect the meta, and Tyene coming up will be stellar.
All right, closing comments, not John. Do we have any closing comments?
I feel like I should fill in for John here. So,
and say nothing?
Yeah, and say okay after you've said something. Like, yeah, I agree with you. I saw Captain America Civil War with some of my metamates. It was really good, and I recommend it. Totally Thrones unrelated. But one thing I did find interesting is that Captain America, you know how some people wear Captain America shirts? Captain America actually wears a mountain shirt. You see I'm filling in for John? It's a mountain joke, I know.
You reminded me. I was actually not going to mention it at all because I don't want to give any spoilers relating to the HBO show, especially now that we're in the territory where people who have read the books don't necessarily know how the show is going to take things. But I finally, 2 weeks later, got a chance to catch up on the two first episodes, and I am not entirely sold. Not from a narrative perspective or an acting perspective, but just from a good TV perspective. There are a number of scenes where they basically just give you a scene to remind you who the character is and then kill them off. And the example I'll give is Balon, because book readers know this. The scene is set up to have him die, and that's the only scene there. And you have no emotional investment in it, and there's no stakes have been changed kind of feeling to it. There's just, we needed to kill off this character, so here's the scene where we do it. Oh, you forgot who it was? Well, we'll give you 2 minutes of backstory. And I'm not fond of that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I'm skeptical of the way this is headed.
I haven't seen any of the new season because I pretty much wrote the show off last season. I can only take so much butchery of something that I like. I love the books. And I think they should have just done as much of a direct translation of the books to the TV show as they could. But the entire time, the executives have been complaining, like, we don't have enough content here, you know. We have to go start, you know, making up our own stuff. But what you just described, like, why did they cut everything out, all the drama around the Ironborn? Why did they have to reduce it to, a 2-minute reminder of who this is and then kill them? Couldn't they have just followed the book story a little bit closer?
Well, Balon does die off screen in the books or off page.
He does, but there's a lot more build up to it. Like,
there is, yeah, there's certainly.
There's all the. I mean, did they touch on? I guess I can't ask. That would be asking spoiler questions about the show. I haven't seen it yet.
All right, there are quite a few regionals. We are in full swing, and it's actually swinging back stateside, since the states have to compress quite a few regionals in a slightly shorter time span because they have their nationals at Origins. So there's one in what I'm sure is not pronounced this way, but should be, Gautier in Mississippi, but it's probably Gaultier on May 14th. One in Raleigh, North Carolina, one in Austin, Texas, and one in Schofield, Wisconsin, which again, potentially is pronounced Schofield, but I doubt that. It's almost certainly Schofield. Anyway, and we also have one in Rochester, New York, which will have Beyond the Wall attendance.
Yeah, including myself and I guess John. Sean and John.
Chester, so you guys driving down again?
That's the plan.
So we'll have some entertaining stories of, what was it that we're, I don't even know if you cut it from the other segments.
The pirate question.
The pirate question.
We're not getting into the pirate question. The pirate question is not for civil ears.
Now, of course, that's what you'd say on the cast. We'll have to press you for details. There is also Turku in Finland and Bologna in Italy running regionals that I know of this coming weekend. So, again, I'm hoping we can pull off another weekend where we get stats for at least those seven tournaments. So far, we've been really good about getting stats in regional season. Once you know the tournament is happening, it's much easier to find someone and guilt them into eventually sending you the stats. Although I still don't have the ones from the FFG regional, even though I have guilted them into it. They claim to be busy, and that's not fair.
Really, what you should do is you should just find, like, people related to these tournament owners and sort of keep track of them. Maybe take a few of them, hold them aside, send them send them letters and pictures. Remember those tournament reports, or Mother's Day might be a lot more sad. It's starting to get dark. Is this part of your world domination plans?
If it was, would I tell you?
True.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
I was like, that was really well done. It's just too bad it's not recording.
It's things like these that make it into the Easter egg.